Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the Everything Pup podcast. I'm your host, Holly Montgomery. Chances are you've never really thought about how many choices you make in one day. And if you're lucky, you've never had to consider what it might be like to start having your choices taken away from you. What would it be like to live a life where everything you do is determined by someone else? When you get up, when you go to the bathroom, when and what you eat, when you can go outside or socialize with friends. Having choices in life is important because it gives you confidence, autonomy, and a sense of control, and we can only assume the same would be true for our canine companions. When you don't have control, you feel helpless, and you don't handle stressful situations very well. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the importance of providing choice in your dog's daily routine and some ways you can give your dog the opportunity to make some of their own decisions.
You're listening to the Everything Pup Podcast, the place for dedicated pup parents to find valuable dog-centric tips, interviews with trusted industry experts and your favorite dog brands, and everything else you need to become an informed advocate for your best friend. Now, here's your host, Holly Montgomery.
Welcome back. Most pup parents can probably count on one hand the amount of times in a day they allow their dog to make a decision for themselves. The fact is that we make almost all of our dog's choices for them. In some ways, this can be a good thing. Our dogs may choose to run into traffic or overeat to the point where they make themselves sick, and that's happened in my household before. Dogs are like kids. They don't always make the best decisions, and they need us around to advocate for their health and safety. That being said, there are many small ways we can allow our dogs to make choices without causing them any harm at all. All of the choices I'll be chatting with you about today will enhance your dog's quality of life and make your dog happier. Isn't that what we all want? Some things are just fun enhancements, while others are ethically non-negotiable. We'll start with those must-have choices first. Number one, the choice to leave to a safe space. In our desire to push activities on our dogs, we think they'll like, and that's usually because most dogs or the average dog likes them. We actually often take away our dog's choice to participate in the activity. I can think of a perfect example that I see on a daily basis, and that's bringing your dog to a pet store. Most dogs, when they come in, they happily bound through the door and they come over and they claim their treats from us, but that's not always the case with all dogs. For some dogs, the tune changes if there's another dog in the store, or maybe there's a large male human with a hat on. And maybe the last time they were in, that guy didn't have a hat on. Some actively pull their way to the front door and leave, and now thankfully this is very rare, but others will hide behind their person's legs and can be gently coaxed out for a treat. In our store, our team knows how to read dog body language, and we know how to interact, or more importantly, not interact with the dog accordingly, but most people don't see the signs of stress and don't give the dog the space he needs. As your dog's advocate, you know your dog best, and it's up to you to know when limits are met and when it's time to leave and go to a safe space. When your dog is on a leash, they can't physically leave without your help. Trust me when I say if you learn to read and respect the signs that your dog is giving you, your dog's trust in you will grow exponentially. Your relationship with them will flourish. Alternatively, if your dog learns you won't protect him in a scary situation, he'll learn he can't depend on you to feel safe, and he'll be left to defend himself. Sometimes we'll have shy or nervous dogs visit us frequently so we can help them get the dog used to being comfortable and confident. This would be during slower times of the day when the dog won't be too overwhelmed with lots of foot traffic. When the dog comes in, we leave them and their human to explore, often without our interference, and we only interact with the dog when he's given us consent. And that's most often dictated by him approaching us for a treat. Keeping these interactions controllable as much as possible and keeping them short is of the utmost importance. Letting the dog leave on a happy note is the goal, rather than pushing them until they need to leave. Another important situation when you should give your dog a choice to leave to a safe space is when children are around. If your dog is stressed or nervous around kids, allowing them refuge is not only important for your dog, but it's important for the safety of the child. Dogs may also become nervous around guests in general or other animals. Some may just grow tired of their presence and need a break. A great example of this is when a young dog or puppy might wear out or get on the very last nerve of an adult or older dog. Providing a safe space in the home that only your pet can access and allowing them to choose to go there when they feel the need is essential. If your dog is used to and enjoys being in their crate, that's one option. A room in the home that's off limits to children, guests, and other pets is another option. It's also important to note that the choice to leave is especially important with fearful dogs. My dog Grizz, for example, is a very fearful dog. He's got noise phobias like thunder, fireworks, and even the beep of the fridge door being left open too long, or even the sound of the house settling scares him. Grizz rarely settles when he's been triggered by a noise he's afraid of and often seeks shelter in his crate or, weirdly, our walk-in shower, and also the closet or the basement. For whatever reason, he must feel more comfortable doing that than sitting by my side. It's taken me some time to just accept that and let him be. If Grizz is forced to stay in a situation I deem more comfortable for him, his agitation visibly increases. Forcing interactions with fearful dogs can make their fears much worse. They must be given the choice to walk away to a safe space. Of course, you know I love disclaimers. The choice is always within reason. Grizz hiding in the basement versus sitting on the bed with me doesn't affect his safety. Allowing him to flee from the yard into traffic because that's his choice obviously is not okay. A little common sense goes a long way here. All right, number two, the choice to walk away from touch or petting. I sometimes wonder how humans and dogs get along so well when humans can't resist their primate urges to grab, hug, and touch. And very often dogs would rather not be touched at all. I'm definitely not of the school that you should never hug or touch your dogs. I know some people are. Dogs can enjoy touch in the right situations. I think the easiest way for people to understand the difference between good and bad touch is to just think of themselves in different situations. For instance, a hand on a shoulder or a hug from someone you know and love is quite pleasant and comforting. Now, if they embrace you for a very long time, it can become annoying or uncomfortable. Now, imagine that person is a stranger that puts their arm around your waist in a grocery store for no apparent reason. Or let's say that same stranger puts their arm around your waist in a private setting when it's just the two of you. Touch can go from nice to annoying to scary really fast. With dogs, you can offer scratches or petting and then stop and see what your dog does. Do they walk away? Let them. Do they wiggle in closer? Give them more scratches. Do they walk a few steps away but they don't leave? Maybe your dog likes to be in your company, but they're done with the physical contact. Taking small pauses and giving your dog a chance to respond is a good way to gauge consent. Since kids are unable to gauge consent in these situations, it's up to us adult humans to do this for them. Again, this is not only for the comfort and safety of your dog, but for the comfort and safety of the child. Apparently, Grizzy wanted to say hi. You may have heard him there a second ago. Now, I do want to make a quick note on growling. Oftentimes, when a dog growls, humans are quick to anger and they punish their dog. Growling in most cases is simply the dog's way of saying, listen, I gave you several signs that I don't like this, and usually we miss all of those signs. I'm asking you again nicely, will you please stop? If you punish the growl, your dog will learn to no longer give this early warning signal, and they may jump to a snap or a bite next time. If your dog's growling is concerning you, please seek help from a rewards-based dog trainer to assess your situation before things go too far. Now, I know some of you are thinking, well, sometimes my dog needs to be touched. What am I supposed to do? And you're not wrong. A vet visit is a perfect example, or maybe you need to trim your dog's nails. It's up to you to learn how to motivate your dog to be okay with touch and become accustomed to these activities. Cooperative care is something you can work on in advance of these situations. Maybe your dog will never learn to love nail trims, but they can learn that nail trims always result in lots of treats and praise, and therefore they can be tolerated or have a positive association. A great example for you, maybe the parking lot at your favorite restaurant sucks, but the food, the atmosphere, and the service is so worth it, you give that crappy parking lot a pass. Of course, there are always exceptions. In the case of an emergency, your dog may be injured and growling and snapping, but in order to get them to safety, you need to restrain them and carry them. Perhaps it could be argued that your dog may be more likely to trust you in these emergency situations if you've earned it through the many positive daily interactions you have together. Number three, the choice to train or not to train. Training should be fun. Let me say it louder for those of you in the back. Training should be fun. If training is fun and motivating, your dog will more than likely stay and train with you until something gets frustrating or becomes too hard. In these cases, your dog should be given the opportunity to walk away. Then you can reassess and see if you can try again by maybe stepping back a little or trying a new way to teach your dog. If your dog is never a willing participant in training, you have to just ask yourself why. Are you losing patience or your temper? Are your training techniques punitive rather than rewards-based? Are you not communicating effectively? Is the task too hard and needs to be broken down into simpler, smaller steps? Do your treats suck? Nobody works for free, man. Are there too many distractions? Maybe your dog is simply just too tired or doesn't feel well. Keep your sessions short. Even many 5-minute sessions per day to work on skills in different places is lots. Your dog should never be forced to train. Now that we have all of those serious things out of the way, let's talk about some fun ways you can add choice into your dog's daily routine. Number four, the choice of how to eat at dinner time. Your dog may not get to choose what they eat every day, but you can make eating more interesting for them. Now, off topic, but one thing you can do to prevent boredom and keep things exciting is to vary your dog's meals. Many dry food brands offer rotational diets with lots of different flavors, and they're meant to be switched back and forth. And if you feed raw, the options are pretty endless. It's such an easy way to improve your dog's physical and mental health. Anyway, I digress, but I can't pass up an opportunity to remind people to mix up the damn food. If you're like most pup parents, you feed your dog from a bowl and always have, and that's okay. But how about trying to add a few toppers to that bowl and letting your dog choose what to eat first? Better yet, feed your dog from a slow feeder or a platter like a mine platter. I especially like platters because you can put raw in one spot, maybe a whole fish in another spot, a puddle of broth in the middle, or maybe throw some pureed veggie on there too. Now, I'll put a link in the show notes to the mine platter, and there'll also be a video on my blog post accompanying this podcast, so you can check out Grizz using the mine platter. So you can let your dog sniff the items and choose the order in which they'd like to eat them. It's kind of like a doggy buffet. It's a very small choice, but it does make dinner time more fun for them. Number five, the choice of how to take walks. Sometimes walks have a purpose. For instance, you need to get from point A to point B in a hurry, or your dog needs to pee because you're late for work. In these cases, there isn't much opportunity for choice. However, if you take your dog on one or two walks a day for their physical and mental health, and I hope that you do, let your dog lead the way on these walks. Your dog is likely to do a lot of sniffing, and you might not actually get very far in terms of distance, but that's okay. Sniffing can actually tire out a dog as much, if not more, than walking for the same amount of time. Let your dog decide what direction to go, and of course, as long as it's safe and he's not sniffing the roadkill in the middle of the road. Number six, the choice of how to play. This one is fun and easy. Now try filling two of your dog's favorite enrichment toys with treats and let them pick which one they want to play with. You can use a puzzle toy, a snuffle mat, a food dispensing ball, or whatever you have on hand. I'll put a link in the show notes to our podcast on enrichment with Danya Rorda, and you can check out some really great ideas. Many people make the mistake when they're shopping for enrichment toys to assume that one puzzle toy is enough. It's a great place to start, but again, think about yourself. You might like to paint, read, or play cards. You don't always entertain yourself in the same way. There are many ways your dog can play without food or enrichment toys too. Maybe they like to chase a ball or dig or tug or chew a bully stick in the grass. Let your dog choose the activity or activities, and you can participate too if it's prudent. For instance, you might not enjoy chewing bully sticks in the grass, but if you do, Have at her. It's your choice. Number 7, choices in the home and yard. Now, this one might seem like a no-brainer, but I never assume that we all think the same way. Give your dog a few different beds in the house, one near a window in the warm sun, one in the basement where it's cool, and maybe one in the bedroom where it's private and quiet. On days when the weather's nice, try propping open a door and let your dog move freely between the house and your secured yard. Set up a water bowl upstairs and one on the main floor. Teach your dog to ring a potty bell when they want to or need to go outside. I often think about how awful it must be to have to pee, and no one is listening to your requests to go outside. The possibilities are endless here. Use your imagination. All right, as you can see, there are lots of ways you can provide choices in your dog's day-to-day life. I challenge you to try one or more of these choices today and make an effort to add more and more options as time goes on. I sincerely hope that you've enjoyed this episode of the Everything Pup Podcast, and I hope you've gotten a few ideas about ways you can give your dog more choice. It's a small yet significant way to make a difference in the quality of your dog's life. I'm Holly Montgomery, and until next time, bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening. If you loved this episode, please subscribe and share with your dog-loving friends. The information in this podcast is not intended to replace veterinary care. Always consult with your veterinarian for diagnosis and treatment of your pup.